This is Sarah McLennan interviewing Eleanor Robinson on February 14th, 2002, about her experience in the waves during World War II for an exhibit and oral history project by the Michigan Women's Historical Center and Hall of Fame entitled A Few Good Women.
My brother was the eldest, and he was already married and had a couple of little boys. And my sister was married and was pregnant and expecting her first child. And so I just felt like somebody in our family should do something. And nobody objected, and I was 22, so I didn't have to have parental concern, but I would have had it if I had wanted it. They were both in favor of me doing this. And I was one of the first in this group of women that worked with the telephone company to go in. And then different ones followed, and we had about five or six of us that had enlisted at the same time. And the general manager called us all into his office and tried to convince us that we were doing just as much for the war effort by staying at the telephone company, because he didn't like losing so many people at the same time. I mean, they had trained us and all this, but nobody fell for his line of gab. We all just went in.
So a bunch of you joined at the same time from where you
worked? Well, there was one other lady that went in at the same time I did. Mm-hmm. And I remember leaving Jackson. We left by train. We enlisted in January, and we didn't actually go in until March because it was that busy. It was new. I was in the 8th Regiment to get into the Waves in Hunter College. And it was still quite a new venture. Mm-hmm. And we enjoyed it. We had a good time. Now, the lady that went in with me, she never got beyond Great Lakes. She stayed there all the time.
Oh.
But I went to Hunter College first. Well, she went to Hunter College and then back to Great Lakes. And I went to Hunter College, and then they tested us for whatever we were good at. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be a link trainer instructor, because somebody in my mother's area of friends had a daughter who went in there, but she said, oh, your daughter can't be in that because it's a very special group. So that made me make up my mind that's what I wanted to do.
Right.
And so I took all the tests, and I did pass them. So I went down to Atlanta, Georgia for my the secondary training. Mm-hmm. And it really was like I had started to tell you earlier before we had this mic on. It's a make-believe airplane, and the young men that are learning to be pilots, they have to learn to depend on the instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what they did. And we had we were operating a radio to give them their glide path and everything that they had working for them. And they had a series of 10 lessons, and if they didn't pass those 10 lessons, they got washed out. And we didn't enjoy doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't want to put anybody up into a real airplane that couldn't pass the ground training.
Right. Was there any specific reason that you decided to join the Navy?
I think I liked the looks of the uniform.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the Marines hadn't really showed their uniforms yet at that time. Or I might have gone into the Marines, because they were really sharp looking.
Were they?
No.
This was 1943?
I went in, I enlisted in January, and I went on active duty in March of 43.
Okay. So what about any of your friends? Did they think it was, like, strange that you decided to join, or were they excited?
Everybody was, real proud to know somebody that was going in.
Mm-hmm.
And today, some of my friends that did not go in regret that they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
They wish that they had taken the same steps.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, a lot of families did have people that objected to it. But my family didn't.
Mm-hmm. So what was your basic training at Hunter College like? Like, what kind of things did they teach you?
It was just very basic. They're just learning about the history of the Navy and what different terms mean. And well, some of it was like a scuttlebutt was the one term that we used, because if you were standing by the drinking fountain and passing information along of what you had been doing that day, just gossip is what it amounts to. Someplace along the line, the Navy put the name scuttlebutt on that type of information. So we had to learn what scuttlebutt was. And for the ladies who smoke, I didn't smoke, I still don't, but if they were smoking, they had to have the smoking lamp lit or they couldn't light up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just basic, simple things.
Mm-hmm. Like the history of the Navy and different terms and regulations. What kind of housing did they have for you guys?
At Hunter College, they were old apartment buildings. And they had been taken over by the Navy. And it was, I think we had six of us to an apartment. And so that, and it was they had double bunks. So that, you know, we were either in the upper or the lower. I always seemed to be given an upper bunk because I had long legs and it was easy for me to get in and out. I'd hate to try it today.
So after you had your basic training, then you said they gave you tests to kind of see where your skills were?
Mm-hmm.
And so then from there, that's when you went on to Great Lakes?
No, I didn't go to Great Lakes.
To Great Lakes.
No, I went down to Atlanta, Georgia.
To Atlanta, Georgia,
and
okay.
That was for what they called LITIS, Link Instrument Trainer Instructor School. There also was at that plane, at that same location, an IFIS group. That was the Instrument Flight Instructor School. So that was mostly the officers,
mm-hmm.
male officers. We didn't run into female officers except the ones that were in charge of our group.
Okay. When you were being trained at Hunter, did you have female or male officers?
We had a male drill instructor because we had to learn to march.
Mm-hmm.
And he yelled at us a lot. But he didn't mistreat us in any way.
Mm-hmm. He was just kind of the drill sergeant.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
The typical one that you hear about.
Right. Was he in the Navy then?
No, he was a Marine.
He was a Marine. Okay. But then when you were down in Georgia, did you have female instructors there or officers?
I think that they were, I think we had some sailors that had previously been doing this type of work, and they were going to be relieved to go to sea duty, and so they were teaching us.
They were teaching you. So then how long were you in Georgia doing your specific training?
It was about a 6-week course. But then when they finished, they gave us a little piece of paper that we could request where we wanted to be stationed. And because I was young and I missed my family, I put down that I would like to get to Great Lakes or to someplace close to Michigan. Well, the closest they could get me was Texas. And that was... what they needed, you know, what it had to be was an air flight school.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
So, and this was for Navy pilots who you were teaching.
And we also had some British cadets that came through.
Oh, really?
And so as we were giving them their lessons in the trainer, we'd have one in the trainer, and then there was a bench sitting in front of our desk. And the different ones could have the headset on, and they could listen to all the conversations between us and the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was strange when we had a British cadet in there. Their sense of humor was so different from the Americans. And they would make a joke, and it didn't sound funny to me at all.
Right.
And they would just roar laughing over it.
So you were kind of giving them radio commands while they were in the trainer.
We operated this... it was an operator that a radio that would give them the sound of the what they would hear as they were in the plane. As you approach, if it had a beam that you had to come in on, and on the one side of the beam it would be da dit, and on the other side of the beam it was dit da.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you got on the wrong side, you could tell. And then it built up so that it was louder as you got closer to the cone. And the cone was where you would change and go in a different direction. And when you're right over the cone, it would be silent.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting. And I wish I had continued in that kind of work after I got out of the Navy.
Yeah. Did you have like any friends who kind of were like in basic with you, or people and then were transferred to Georgia with you, or did everyone kind of go different places?
When I was sent down to Georgia, I was, you know, with a group of ladies that I got acquainted with, and then they all got their assignments sooner than I did, because I had asked to go to Michigan. I guess that was what the big problem was. So they put me on the maintenance crew. And so I worked on keeping these machines working for the next ones that came in. So then by the time I got an assignment, and which was down to Texas, it was one of these things that I knew these ladies, but I didn't know them well. And a sad thing happened. We had a chance to either, we had a break of, say, I think it was a week or 10 days that we could be off on our own. And a lot of the ladies went down to New Orleans, and I didn't know them well enough, so I didn't want to do anything like that with them. So I went home to see my folks. And then I left to go back down to Texas, where I was my duty station. And they made a mistake at the depot when they gave me my ticket. And the lady was very rude. I said, "Are you sure that's right?" Because I said, "It should take longer than that." And she said, "I told you what it was going to be." Well, after I got on the train, then I found out she had overlooked a 24-hour lapse.
Oh, no.
So I knew I was going to be late. And when I got down there, I was absent, over leave. And I had to stand the captain's mask, which is the same thing as a trial.
Oh, no.
And very devastating. And then they made me a prisoner at large because I had violated a Navy principle. And this is one of the things that we had learned in boot camp, that you have to go by Navy regulations. And so because I was a prisoner at large, I had this sign about that long, so big, said PAL on it, prisoner at large. And I had to have that on my bed for 3 nights. And during that time, these other girls, they didn't know if they wanted to get acquainted with me or not. They didn't know what I had done.
Right.
But eventually, I won them over.
So even though your train was late, you still had to have the consequences for that. Jeez. So what did you think about being in a predominantly male environment in the Army? Like, how was that?
I loved it. And I had not been a real popular person in high school. I didn't date a lot. But down there, the girls were sort of a premium. I mean, nobody needed to go. I mean, if you wanted to go into town, there was always a sailor or a cadet or somebody that would just as soon escort you, or you go in by yourself, and then they would probably escort you home. But it was really very, very nice. I mean, they were nice young boys. Mm-hmm. And as the war progressed, they kept getting younger and younger because the age where they drafted them was younger.
Right. So you didn't encounter any kind of, like, people who were not happy with you being there or anything like that?
No. If some of the sailors had wished that we hadn't come because they didn't want to go to sea, we didn't hear a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that there were some that might have felt that way.
Right.
But most of them were anxious to get out and go to sea. And that's what we relieved them so they could.
So then they could go. So were there any stereotypes about military women that you heard at the time or that, you know, were just kind of floating around in general?
I didn't hear any. Mm-hmm. Most of the ladies that I was stationed with were former school teachers. And it was a different way of life. I mean, we just lived together. It was like a big family. One of the places that we were billeted, now billeting is where you're assigned to where you're going to stay, and it was what had formerly been a chief's building, a Navy chief's, and so the only bathroom on board, which is a bathroom, is called a head, and we learned that early, but we walked into this head, and there were these little urinals that would have been used for men, by men, and we thought, well, it was sort of an eyesore to us. You go in and there's this little thing. So one of the girls was from the South, and she went over to the mess hall, and she talked the cook into giving her a couple of sweet potatoes and brought them over, and she planted them right in the urinal. And then every time any of us went in, we flushed the john, and we watered that. We had beautiful sweet potato plants growing there.
And that worked out fine, and we were real proud of them until one day they had what they call captain's mast.
Uh-huh.
And the captain came in with his, when they have captain's mast, it's a group of people, men and women. And they decided that that was not according to Navy regulations and that we couldn't have them, and so they were going to do without them. But I took a snapshot of them before they got out of there.
Oh, that has to be a great picture. So then were you in Georgia through the rest of the, or I mean, I'm sorry, in Texas?
Texas? Yeah,
through the
I
rest
was
of the
there.
War. Mm-hmm. And were you there until the war ended?
Yes, yeah. I was there. And then when the war was over, we were given the option. We could, you know, enlist again, but I wanted to get home. And so they sent me to Great Lakes for what they called the mustering out process. And that's where I ran into the same lady that I had entered with when she was stationed at Great Lakes all this time.
Oh, neat.
And so she was doing the clerical work for us, getting us out of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was all over. But I enjoyed it. I really think that it's one of the best things that could happen to a young woman. And I think it would be nice that they had young people of both sexes, mm-hmm, have it required to be, if not a full 3 years or 6 years or anything like that, just a short time. Navy training or the boot camp training for Marines, and then what they have for men too, I mean, for the Army, I think it's good for them.
Mm-hmm.
They learn discipline.
Mm-hmm. So how about how you were treated by your women officers or the officers in general? Like, what kind of relationship did you have?
Very good.
Very good?
Yeah.
Was it kind of like a friend relationship or more, you know, their superior officer?
In our work as link trainer instructors, we would have a group of maybe 40 or 50 women, and then there would be one woman officer that was in charge, was over us. And then over and above her, there would be male officers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all very fair. I enjoyed the time I was with them.
Mm-hmm. So what was your daily routine like when you were down in Texas?
We had either the there were two different periods of time, either from 6 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, or from 2 in the afternoon until, I think it was 8 at night. And then if you were on the early type, that was when you were required to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if when it came time for you to be off duty, then you were on your own. You could come and go as you pleased, go mm-hmm. into Atlanta, and we could do just about anything we wanted to.
So how long were your shifts when you do your link training?
As I recall, we stayed on the same shift all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But my memory is not that good on some of that stuff.
That's okay. So about how many hours at a time do you think that was?
It was about eight
about
hours.
About 8 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have weekends off, or how many days a week did you... Can you remember?
I can't remember exactly, but I do know that when we had one duty-free weekend, and sometimes we would have duty that when we weren't doing anything as a link trainer instructor, we would have duty in the barracks.
Oh, okay.
But if we had a duty-free weekend, the little town that we were stationed in was Beeville, Texas, and it was between San Antonio and Corpus Christi. And so one weekend that we were free, we'd go to one of those big cities, and the other, the next time we would go to the other one.
Mm-hmm.
We'd take a bus, we'd ride the bus. One of the gals did have her own car brought down to her. And so once in a while, we'd be fortunate enough to be with her. And
that's nice.
Mm-hmm. But she was the only one that I know of that had a mm-hmm. car.
And she was able to park it right on the base where you were
stationed. I don't know how she handled that.
Yeah. What did you do when you were on barracks duty? Like, what kind of things did that involve?
Well, just making sure that everybody was where they were supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose there were, I don't remember having any cleanup duty, but there probably were some that did have, mm-hmm. because it doesn't take care of itself.
Right. So let's talk about your uniforms a little bit. I know you mentioned earlier that they were pretty attractive, but what kind of different types of uniforms did you have and what did they look like?
In New York, and at Hunter College, we had this the navy blue skirts and a white blouse or a light blue blouse and the navy tie and the jackets were all blue wool. And then when we traveled down into the South, we needed something a little lighter weight, so they had, by this time, devised these seersucker. And I remember a seersucker dress. And then, of course, by that time, we were working around these link trainers, so we had to have slacks. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, we wore our navy blue slacks and then a lighter colored top with it. Mm-hmm. Because when you're climbing up on the edge of this, you have to be ladylike about how you're dressed.
Right.
And so we wore slacks. But those that didn't wear slacks, there was a skirt and blouse type seersucker uniform, or the dress and then a cap. The cap, you always had to wear a cap when you were going outside.
Did you like all of your uniforms, or did you like one more than another?
My figure is not exactly as good as it should be. It wasn't even then. And so I had a tailor-made white uniform that I had made when I was down in Atlanta, because I wanted to have a dress white uniform that was fit me properly. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed that. I don't know what I ever did.
Did you have any kind of regulations about hair, makeup,
oh,
and
yes.
jewelry?
The hair had to be off your collar. And I don't remember that they said much about jewelry. Probably they did, but I wasn't the type of person that wore a lot of jewelry anyway.
What about like stockings and shoes? Were there regulations about those too?
When we first started, they had the Lyle hose, and you probably don't even know what that is. It's a knitted cotton. Terrible. And it was very uncomfortable. And we wore them because we had to. And when we got down into the warmer climates, I don't remember having those heavy socks then. Mm-hmm. So they must have devised some way that we could wear nylons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and so was there an emphasis on looking ladylike or feminine, even though you were in the Navy?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So did that kind of occur to like having your hair nice or looking clean and neat? Do you remember any specific?
Well, we were limited on our hair because, like I say, it was the first time I ever met anybody who ratted her hair. This one lady had very small, very light, not much of a head of hair. Mm-hmm. And so she would do her back combing that I had never heard of before, but it worked for her. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't wear the long hair.
No. But they did want you to always look ladylike
yes.
and neat and clean and have those kind of regulations. So how do you feel about your experience overall?
I would do it again in a minute. Mm-hmm. If I could. If I were a young woman today, I'd be tickled to death to be going in service. Mm-hmm.
And what did you do after you got out of the service? And you went back home?
I went back to work at the telephone company. Well, in the first place, I didn't go back right away because I got out in November, my husband got out in December, and we were married in January. Mm-hmm. And the first year I was married, I had my first baby, so I was busy washing diapers. But eventually I wanted to go back to work to help with the household expenses, and so I was able to get back into the telephone company, and they, after you're back a certain length of time, they will bridge your service, and so And eventually, I stayed at the telephone company long enough to get a retirement from there, which I'm glad I have.
So did you meet your husband while you were in the service?
No, he and I are distantly related. And so I had known him long before I went in.
You knew him before? Yes. Okay. Were you dating at all when you entered, or that just happened?
I had no special person that I was dating, but I did a lot of dating while I was in.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I said, you know, women were very, we were the minority, and so the men liked having, if you know, the ones that wanted a good time, we'd go to the USO, and the USO was a good place to meet people, and then they might want to go to a movie or, and occasionally there'd be a dance. There was a dance at one of the army bases not far from where we were stationed, and they would arrange for some of us to go down by bus. And it was all well chaperoned. It was a good, clean-cut way of dating.
Right. Was there a curfew when you had to be back at night?
Oh, yes.
Anything?
Yeah. But I don't remember what it was now, but there was a curfew.
It was a certain time. So what do you think about women in the military today and things like women in combat or what kind of roles they should play?
I have reservations about that. I don't think that they should be in combat. But, of course, that's not what has happened. I mean, they want the women to go in, mm-hmm. and the women of that age want to go in. But I don't know. Sometimes it's robbing a little baby of a mother.
Right, yeah. Right. But you do support women being involved in the military.
Oh, yes. But I think that it should be limited to more like it was when we were in. Mm-hmm. If one of our members of the Waves got pregnant right away, she was discharged from the Navy because that was, you know, there was no place. Today, they have maternity outfits for them.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they do, and they're very attractive.
Yeah, things have changed.
Oh, yes, very much.
Okay, so you wanted to talk a little bit about your Waves National Group and how you guys reunited after the service.
I didn't realize that they had an organization until I found a little tiny ad that said it was if I could be there by in any time at their December meeting of 1986, I would be a charter member. And so naturally, I mean, I wanted to find out what it was all about. And there was, I think there were around 40 women that were at that meeting. It was from all over the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so then since that time, that group has broken off. Some of the ladies were from the Detroit area and they didn't want to travel all over the state of Michigan. So they have their unit down in Detroit called SEMWAVES, S-E, Southeast Michigan Waves. And the first one that I went to, it has continued as just Michigan Waves. We also have a third unit in Michigan that's in the Upper Peninsula. And so this group is nationwide. It goes all over the country. At one time, we were up to almost 7,000 members. But we have a downside to it, and that is that a lot of the ladies that were in during World War II are passing on.
Mm-hmm.
So we have now, I think that we are pretty close to 5,000 members that are active.
Mm-hmm. And it's all organized by state?
Yes, and we have 100, well, the most recent unit that was formed was unit number 150. But we don't have that many because some of them, they would lose interest and people would not keep up. So that they, you know, then they had to have at least 7 active members in order to maintain their charter.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes they would just lose it. But we have, I would guess, about 130 active units across the country.
Oh, that's great.
And we have conventions. We're having one coming up in Oregon. Before that, we had, our most recent one was in Cleveland, Ohio. The one prior to that was in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Oh, nice.
So we have traveled all over the world for trying to make it someplace where these ladies could all have a chance to attend.
Mm-hmm. And that all started in 86. You said that's when the whole thing
Well,
got
it
organized.
Actually had started in 79, but it started in Michigan in 86.
Michigan in 86. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. And then you also said you were in the American Legion.
Yes, I joined that just to, well, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and it's an all-women post, and we would like to have more women join it if we could get them.
Yeah, that's really nice.
But we only have about 21 members in that post.